Hello and welcome to the Melissa Diaz Report. My name is Melissa Diaz, coming to you live from Austin, Texas, baby, where the steers are queer, you dig? And the barbecue ain't bad, but you'll never get to Franklin, so you'll probably end up at Black's, Terry Black's, that is. Okay, there's a little inside baseball about the BBQ here. You have to make appointments, barbecue appointments in Austin, Texas, similar to a dentist's appointment. You have to do that. Unfortunately, there's no ZocDoc to just triangulate all the barbecue. You have to actually, you know, look one up and reach out to them and make an appointment, preferably through their website, especially Franklin's Barbecue. Otherwise, you won't be seen and you won't be given any barbecue and you'll be turned away and you will have no choice but to just go back and get some more tacos at the taco truck. Okay? That's so sad. No barbecue. Anyway, what's going on today? What are we going to cover this Thanksgiving week? We're not going to have an episode on Thursday. I'm going to be with my family. Mainly going to be with dinner with my in-laws, and they're Russian, so lots of joy and smiling. If you know Russians, you know they are joyful, joyful people, and no darkness there whatsoever. Everything will be full of light and lightness and laughter and carefree, worry-free Thanksgiving dinner. And that's what I love about my Russian in-laws, is that that is exactly the experience I have every single year for the past 10 years. Just joy and laughter. You know, like how Russians are. How Russians are known to be just like that. Just, man, ugh, my face hurts when I leave there from all of the smiling. So anyway, at least I'm going to have a baby this time, so that'll be something everybody can stare at. Just a proof of the future and proof of life right in front of everybody's face. So you can't, no deniability. No deniability when there's a beautiful, cute little baby in front of you. So that's something. That's almost why I had the fucking baby. Just so that, just to prove them wrong. They're stoic. Unwillingness to find joy and to be cynical. I was like, oh yeah, check out the rabbit I'm gonna pull out of this hat. This hat being my C-section incision. And then I pull it out. Here you go. What do you think of that? Ta-da! And they were very impressed. And now they're obsessed. And that's what you should do with sad people. Just have a baby and just lob it at them. Just put it in a what do you call those? A trebuchet. Put it on a trebuchet and throw it over their emotional walls like warfare, like emotional warfare. And you go, and they're in there behind their castle walls of hey, I'm not negative. I'm just a realist. You know, this is just real. This is light. And then you go, oh yeah, get another one of these. And then just a baby. And they go, oh my God, you're right. Open the drawbridge. Let them in. And that's how you do that. Anyway, moving on. We're going to cover today. Nicki Minaj delivers speech at UN to highlight claims of Christian persecution in Nigeria, followed by a new study featured in Smithsonian Institute magazine, where apparently urban raccoons are showing signs of early domestication with shorter snouts than their rural cousins, followed by Trump Mandani meeting at the White House. And then finally, we're going to end talking about Venezuela, because the U.S. seems really interested in Venezuela. Venezuela. Nobody else is, though. We've moved on from Latin America. And that's what I love. That's what I love about American news. You know, it's just so much madness happening all over the world. But, you know, we really got to cut it up and edit it down to some consumable sound bites so that people can be aware, but in a way that's episodic and dramatic and feels exciting. And like, where are we going to look next? Where are you going to take this Eye of Sauron? What part of the world? And now everyone's riveted on the season finale of the Middle East right now. So that's where we're at, everybody. So yeah, let's move on to our thing, our first story. Nicki Minaj, she delivered a speech at the United Nations to highlight claims of Christian persecution in Nigeria. Let's give that a little looksy-wootsy. Let's give that a little, oops, sorry. That's, here we go. Yes, Nicki Minaj. Nicki Minaj, by the way. Nicki Minaj, I'm sure, the first person that pops into your head when it comes to diplomatic relations with the continent of Africa and its nations.
Hello, everyone. I must say, I am very nervous, so.
I love the toned down color scheme she has on, just all black, in mourning.
Music has taken me around the globe. I have seen how people, no matter their language, culture, or religion, come alive when they hear a song that touches their soul. Religious freedom means we all can sing our faith regardless of who we are, where we live, and what we believe.
That was a pretty big jump from twerking music to religious freedom. Am I crazy? Is Nicki Minaj, she's not a gospel singer by any means, is she? Is she not? I'm pretty sure she is. I mean, she's probably the furthest from a something Christian, right? Because isn't she kind of more representative of more libertinism and fun and, you know, letting it all hang out and partying, concerts and stuff like that? Isn't she? She's kind of there for that. Although there isn't much of a difference between congregating at Bonnaroo to watch Nicki Minaj and going to some mega church, really. Not much of a difference, except for the drugs at the concert are probably better. The drugs at the church are not good. They rely heavily on psychosomatics and psychoses, like mass hysteria, to get people to get to that high. And that's a lot of work when you could just pop a Molly and go to ACL live and watch somebody and then just have an orgasm in your head.
I am joined here today by peace builders, by faith leaders, by those who saw violence, saw rising intolerance, saw the threats clearly before us, and chose not to look the other way.
Oh, okay. We're not looking the other way on Nigeria anymore. Well, everyone, I guess the news is clear. Some time in the near future, we are mobilizing to Africa more. I guess we already dipped the toe in by covering Sudan, but Sudan doesn't have, I don't think, really a lot to offer us right now in terms of any kind of, you know, profit opportunities. So yeah, I guess Nigeria, I guess we're chasing, what are we chasing, Hamas or the Taliban into Nigeria? What's going on right now? Well, the Taliban already got what they wanted, right? Nigeria, by the way, recently had some rogue terrorist group. I think it may have been Boko Haram, but I don't know if they're still there like that. I don't follow Nigerian, you know, politics to the T, but they did steal like another 300 people from a village or something recently, like just a couple days ago. So they could be just trying to pivot to Nigeria, perhaps to just, you know, get things a little organized for a second, because that's probably a huge drain on human resources. I mean, you keep taking people for your own startup. That's basically what these terrorists are doing. You know, because terrorists are startups for nation building. That's just much like a Silicon Valley startup is, it's a startup for a larger tech corporation. They are hoping that if they, you know, do this thing and then people get hired and they do it for whatever the pay is, because they're hoping that in the long run, they get it on the ground floor and then the company makes it and then it becomes a giant company. And now you're growing with that company and you have all these opportunities and all this pay and all this stuff, right? And this is what you would hope for. And much like that, so-called terrorist groups, I mean, they're called that by, you know, the people that they threaten the most, which is the nation state that they're trying to supplant. So yeah, it's a you're terrorizing. I guess you're terrifying to the people that run that nation. You're terrorists to them. They're terrified of you because they don't want to lose power. So yes, they call them terrorists because they are terrified of them. And then depending on what your ideology is and how radicalized you are, as they say, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter, blah, 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 blah. So these terrorists are just, these are startup companies. This is the jungles of the world are the Silicon Valleys of nation builders, basically. And that's what you got to do. And it just like a startup company, you know, you have to kind of go into the jungle and poach talent. But usually you have angel investors and stuff like that. So they're able to pay a wage and incentivize people to sign up for this startup on their own, because we are privileged here, right? We're privileged. So they have that and they can offer that at least for some period of time. And so people, you know, they get, and also people are desperately seeking work now. So they want jobs, right? On the other hand, the startup culture of terrorist organizations is quite different, because you have very few angel investors. I mean, I guess you do actually. You have Iran and stuff like that, but they don't seem to pay well. They don't seem to be really putting their money where their mouths are enough, so they can't actually attract the level of talent, i.e., civilians, because you need citizens for your nation state, right? So they can't incentivize these people to just go into a literal jungle. It's not like Silicon Valley. It's an actual jungle. It's not a concrete jungle, not an urban jungle, right? It's not a San Diego where, you know, you'd rather, it's more comfortable and affordable to live in another state, but you go to San Diego and you kind of put up with the high price of lattes and stuff. But to go into an actual jungle is to go away from any hope of having a latte ever again in your fucking life. So these people, you know, nobody wants to do it. So I guess terrorist groups just have to take people. They have to forcibly take people. They send out their HR department with Kalashnikovs and such, and a lot of other weapons that they, you know, in a roundabout way, get mainly from the United States, because we are one of the foremost weapons manufacturers in the world. That's our main door-to-door salesman product that we offer. That is what we do. And they go and take the talent that they need. And the talent that they need, usually, you know, nation building, is you want to really get the most bang for your efforts, the most bang for your buck. And so they will tend to take children and girls, young girls, because the younger, the better for brainwashing, as everybody, every nation knows, every established nation, the United States knows it. That's why they start brainwashing people with Walt Disney cartoons from the get-go. Best thing to do is you got to start young. Teach them that you want to be a princess, but also have this, sort of bipolar understanding that we don't like princesses in this country, but you want to be a princess, but we don't want actual, well, you can't be a princess, but we like princesses. You should be a princess. You should aspire to be a princess, but we don't actually like princesses. Princesses are not good for democracies because it's a monarchy. We don't like those, but we want you to live like a princess. You should want to live like a princess. And so then what they do, you know, then they, that's how they turn you into a consumer. Because then you're like, well, I can't be a princess. No one can, but I can buy my way into living like a princess. And then there you go. And then men will always just do whatever the fuck it takes to get a girl. So then they realize that, well, I just have to make enough money to make an offer to a beautiful young woman that she can live like a princess, or I will, you know, if you're broke, you can say, I will treat you like a princess if you just come with me. Just come with me. But like I said, the startup culture in Nigeria is apparently, it's very cutthroat, and they don't have, you know, the venture capitalists of, you know, Islamic terrorists are not great, it seems. They're not really putting a lot of funding in. They just have a lot of manpower. And so manpower instead of money, you're basically back to being in one of the earliest stages of pre-civilizational organization as a startup that wants to be a nation. So that means that with manpower, that's all you have to take to attract talent. So you take the man and they use their power to take the women, and then the women give birth to many, many citizens for your future nation. And then they are children, and then you raise them, and then, you know what I mean? Like, that's how you build to becoming a nation one day. And that's a startup culture. That's a startup culture thing, but in a society that sucks by comparison. So that it's by a society that doesn't have lattes. You can, you know, that's really the mark of a society. Is it's latte art. If you really want to know where to live in your life, think about it. Because it's so whimsical to take a thing like milk, froth it, and then make ephemeral art that's just for an in-the-moment experience, like a quick morning routine, not even something you're going to keep with you. It's just an experience that you can have in the morning. Quick art in your cup, and then your eyes are just in your cup, and you sipping it, fucking it up, and no more art. You sip your coffee, and then you go out and you be productive, or you just don't be productive. You just be complete ADD until, and just spiral until the caffeine wears off, and then you crash. It doesn't even matter. But to be as whimsical as latte art, that's the mark of a truly good neighborhood. That's what you want. Keep an eye out if you ever want to know where you want to aspire to be, is where is that latte art? And is it really good? Is it like microfoam? And can they make many shapes? Not just that little pine tree one, but like little rabbits and things like that. That's where you want to be. Because anyone who's doing latte art like that can afford to focus on something so unimportant, because there's no gunfire, there's no car accidents, there's no noise, there's no, the tips are good, so there's no reason to be disgruntled. There's hope that you can be a barista and do a good job, because you're like, I'm not going to be this forever. And even if you are this forever, you're okay with it. These are all good signs. So you don't, I'd be very surprised if you could just find latte art in Nigeria, that like a lot of it, you know what I mean? Maybe in a very good neighborhood, but I don't know. I would have to Google, but I really feel strongly about this so far. I will do some research. But we're going to Africa because Nicki Minaj said so at the United Nations. And that's people like her. She's just the higher level, the higher paid level of something that they just do. They do it at all levels. I've been to United Nations. I've done Model UN. The United Nations, you can cosplay as a UN delegate. You can cosplay as that if you're in college I don't know if you know that. And they give you a little laminated name tag, and you dress up, and your heels are like clock, clock, clocking into that hotel in Midtown Manhattan where it happens. And then you all pretend to come to create resolutions in little groups of people, and you act like it's important. You sit in little corners, you take your blazer off. You like talk to people, right? You make deals. And then you come to your, you write out your resolutions, huge waste of paper, and then you present it at some little side meeting. And that's supposed to be like a little cosplay, a little Comic-Con, if you will, of the United Nations General Assembly. You can even sit in a room and all that stuff. And that's another thing, right? You get to like play at being important. But the thing is, it's like the United Nations isn't really important, so you're kind of playing at being unimportant and acting like that's important. So that's a whole thing. And they bring in kids and young adults and to speak on various issues. And they, I'll tell you from experience, they don't sound much more intelligent or in depth or incisive or visionary than Nicki Minaj. They don't sound any better, and they don't sound any worse. To her credit, she did her job, and good luck to her. I wish her the best, because that's where you end up eventually. Because once your Hollywood career is over, your only other options are basically fade into complete irrelevancy, or enjoy be a little relevant at the United Nations and guide your fan base, which is the most important thing, into irrelevant political diplomatic bullshit rhetoric, just talky. And then and now she gets to have like a little concert at the United Nations. I wish she would have twerked at this speech. I wish they would make the UN more fun, because the gravitas kind of gets on your nerves after a while, because it's like, you guys, you're not doing anything. Let's do a twerkathon. Let's have a good time. Anyway, moving on. What's going on? Urban raccoons showing signs of early domestication with shorter snouts than their rural cousins. Isn't that interesting? The shorter faces of city-dwelling trash bandits offer a telltale sign of domestication and line up with a leading hypothesis about animals that adapt to human-dominated environments, according to a new study. Basically, this kind of comes down to shorter snouts mean we think it's cuter. I mean, and that really kind of holds up, because it happened to cats, it happened to dogs. And now it's happening to raccoons. And you can tell by looking at Looney Tunes cartoons and the way they used to portray raccoons, they kind of don't look like that anymore. Now they kind of look like a baby wearing a fur coat and a ski mask. That's what raccoons look like now. And they have little hands. And that's great, because a little raccoon with the little tiny hands, how many things can't that raccoon do? There's so much a viable candidate for a new pet. I mean, because they can do, especially if you get cannabis legalized completely, because now with those little hands, now you got a little baby in a fur coat and a ski mask hanging out with you while you take your edibles, right? And then you can send it to get you something from the fridge, get a drink, get a glass of milk, right? You can give it your little weed grinder, and it can like grind your weed for you. It can roll a joint for you with their little tiny raccoon hands. Your cat can't do that. And for you dog people who like to shit on cat people, your dog can't do that either. I know your dog can do a lot, and I know dogs have been trained to do all sorts of things, but your dog can't roll a blunt and never will. They can't. They drool too much, so they can't lick the blunt wrap. So raccoons are probably going to basically blow the whole dog versus cat thing out of the water. Nobody cares anymore. Welcome raccoons. And, you know, cats and dogs are just going to have to, they're going to have to step it up a little bit. They're going to have to learn some new skills. maybe cats can start really start massaging. What can cats do? Massage, maybe knead bread, stuff like that. I think they can. I've seen some videos where they save babies from falling off rooftops or something. But raccoons, definitely some good candidates for this shit. I got the Trump-Mamdani meeting. We actually don't have time to cover a lot of stuff, so let's go through this quickly. The Trump-Mamdani meeting, New York City Mayor Eric Adams. So the Mamdani meeting, that was a very interesting one at the White House. That was a really interesting thing to see, because basically you just see Mamdani and Trump. Trump is sitting, you know, at the desk at the Oval Office. Mamdani's standing next to him, like to his right, right-hand man, so you know the symbolism, right? And they're just talking about how they had a meeting and they agreed on things, they were surprised. And it's all wonderful and it's really all coming together. And I hope people really start to see what a show this is, because it's not like they're going to really be friends. Once he leaves this office, Mamdani, he's going to really just go back to calling Trump a fascist. Trump's going to go back to calling him a communist. And it's just business as usual, because politics is a wrestling match at this point. It's a wrestling match. And these are two guys who have constituents, which now are going to be more closer to what you would think of as followers on social media than constituents. They're actually very much alike in that they're entertainers and people are entertained by them, and they are very camera ready people. And it's just going to be a big wrestling match. They're going to talk shit and then rile up their bases. And then when they get in the room together, it's like, you know, handshakes and kisses. And maybe, I don't know, Trump should just start giving people raccoons can we put a raccoon in a swag bag? I should have stuck with going to the State Department when I was in college, because now it's looking like we're getting really close to political events where you go out the door and they give you a swag bag and there might be like a live raccoon in there for you as a pet. And I'm really bummed out that I am missing that opportunity. So yeah, Mamdani, Trump. And then finally, we have U.S., which is Associated Press did a breakdown of, which is pretty interesting. And it's basically saying that the U.S. is set to label the Venezuelan president Maduro tied cartel de los Soles as a terror organization, which is, according to the AP, it's not a cartel per se, which is interesting, actually. I read this article. It breaks down like this. So President Donald Trump's administration is set to ramp up pressure on Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro on Monday by designating the cartel, that's today, by the way, Cartel de los Soles, as a foreign terrorist organization. But the entity that the U.S. government alleges is led by Maduro is not a cartel. This is what you need to know. The designation is the latest measure in the Trump administration's escalating campaign to combat drug trafficking in the U.S. In previewing the step about a week ago, U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio accused Cartel de los Soles, or Cartel of the Suns, of being responsible for terrorist violence in the Western Hemisphere. I mean, yeah, this is what I'm saying, dude. This is a startup. This is startup culture. Don't you understand it? Don't you understand how that they have to be competitive? That they're cutthroat, man. They're trying to replace the Mexican government. They kind of already have. I mean, really, what is a nation anymore, right? A nation doesn't have to be within geographic boundaries, but it does help to be anchored to some geographic space, like as a token of their legitimacy. And Mexico is that Venezuela, actually. But terror, like the Mexican cartels, that's that. But Mexican cartels have completely overtaken the Mexican. I mean, you can't get elected there. They will shoot you if they don't want you. And that's basically how it is. And they're running things, right? And I guess that's why the U.S. isn't really is focusing on Venezuela more than Mexico, because Mexico is probably a lost cause at this point when it comes to that. I don't think there's no Mexican government and that is just the cartels, but I am starting to think that the Mexican cartels are kind of in a weird symbiotic relationship with Mexico, the country. And people are probably aware of that on some level. So now we're doing Venezuela. Maybe they're trying to prevent Venezuela from from the same thing occurring. But why is it occurring to begin with? Right? It's because we are a bunch of drug addicts over here. You know, like William S. Burroughs said it in Naked Lunch, right? It's like, you got to treat the junkie, not the people selling the junk. If you treat the junkie, then they won't buy any junk, and then you won't have this problem. But they'll never do that, because that means being like empathetic and doing like real hard work and working towards things that are very, very difficult to stop, like the causes of drug use, which is like, you know, getting molested as a kid and all kinds of other stuff like that, and poverty and shit, ignorance, illiteracy. That stuff, actually helping people become literate, healed, hopeful, citizens with self-awareness of who they are and what their relationship to the country that they live in is, and that they have value, teaching people that they have value. That's not what the United States is all about. It's not about curing drug addicts, right? We love addicts here. It's just that they don't want them addicted to things that do nothing for them, for the United States government and its affiliates. So, that's what I'm saying. But they need us to still buy into this. Otherwise, everybody would move away into the fucking woods. I mean, we would go to the jungles. If people really realize that politicians aren't going to do anything for you, and that you are wasting your time, and they're wasting your time until you're too old to do anything about it, they just keep stringing you along. It's getting harder to do lately. I have theories about that. But they keep stringing you along until it's too late. And then they tell your kids that you're crazy and you're a boomer, so that your kids don't listen to you when you start to try to warn them, and your kids start falling for the exact same things you did. This is the game. And that's it. Because if we realize that it was all bullshit and that it kind of didn't matter either way, and that, you know, the food's poison, the water's poison, and they don't, you know, you're not going to get health care and stuff, like no health care, people would get up. Some of them, at least, and they would be like, well, why aren't I going to the jungle with this startup nation, the startup entrepreneur nation? Maybe if I get on the ground floor with those guys, maybe I'll get some health care. Maybe I will. What's up with that? And everybody would just, people would just kind of disperse. I'm not saying everybody would just go off grid and join terrorist organizations, but some would want to get on the ground floor of a new nation. Because this one is, it's too big already, right? It's harder to get into a big corporation and move up than a startup. Everybody knows that. So, you know, I don't know. They used to be able to get away with this shit because 9/11 hadn't happened, number one. And I think, in my opinion, number two, because we at least had, we had Hollywood. We had the music business, and they were churning out some serious hits throughout all of the more contentious years. I mean, JFK got assassinated, right? But, you know, what else was happening? Motown, okay? So the music was so good at that time that the music was even singing about the things that people were upset about, like Vietnam. And violence and things like that, and drugs and stuff, right? People, they would sing about it throughout the past five decades. They were singing about it, but the hits were hitting so hard that it just, this problem is, you know what I mean? Like, if you hear a good song, look, watch the Trump Mamdani, meeting with the press interviewing them, right? Watch it with some music from now, like Drake or some shit like that, or like Bad Bunny. Watch it with that and see how you feel compared to listening to it, watching the Trump Mamdani meeting while listening to like Al Green or something like that, okay? It's a completely different experience. Listen to some Motown music, okay? Very superstitious, right? He's saying it in the lyrics. Very superstitious, writings on the wall, ow, ow, ow. And you know what it makes you do? It makes you nod your head. Don't you see the diabolicalness of it is that they sing exactly what's going on. It's so good, though. The music is so good that as you are thinking about the JFK assassination, you are nodding along. You're just nodding, right? And nodding in our culture means acceptance. So we nodded our way through the last few decades, listening to some of the greatest music ever from all across the whole spectrum of every ethnic and cultural and countercultural group in this country. It was fantastic. And we nodded our heads from Vietnam all the way on through Iran-Contra, through all the way through the 20th century Latin American CIA-backed coups, all the way on through the Bosnian War. I mean, music and nodding, and every decade it was like a new crop of amazing artists. But then it started to trail off somewhere in the 90s, right? And then that's where people started to wake up, because they stopped nodding along because the music started to suck. And now that everything's AI slop, if you listen to music now, it doesn't make you want to nod. It makes you want maybe like nod off like a heroin addict, right? But you don't nod anymore. And I think that is part of the reason why people are not buying into this bullshit anymore, because the music sucks. There's no reason to nod along anymore. You're not even giving people amazing art. We're not even singing about love or anything or brotherhood, nothing. It's just they have replaced it with just like robotic, consumerist, violent, contentious, alienating lyrics. You know, it's because it's all about like buying and fuck that bitch. And listen, I'm not saying there's anything inherently like you shouldn't have this music. I'm saying this is most of the music, right? And so it's kind of it's the whole vibe. And if that's your only vibe, you don't have any other vibe, then it kind of leads to the kind of people that you keep seeing now. It's just kind of angry, frustrated, disgruntled or apathetic, depressed, anxious. It's because that's the music. It's just this droning, incessant rhythm that just accompanies you as you consume products and services every single day. And yeah, no more nodding. That's what happened. Trust me. Listen, watch anything, actually, anything about Epstein or anything like that, like, and switch the music up. Watch it with modern music and then watch it with like some funky ass Motown or some like beautiful, like some effervescent, you know, 80s bubbly pop synth shit or something like that, or like David Bowie, and your whole attitude will change. That's why they want nostalgia culture to stay forever, because it's their only hope, because they're not investing in any good music. There is none anymore, because everyone has become a digital marketer instead of an artist. So they know that they're trapped. They're kind of inching towards the end. People are getting sick of nostalgia. There's no good music to replace it. So you're not going to keep nodding along to everything they're saying. Ooh, what's going to happen? I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, that's the end of the Melissa Diaz Report for today. My name is Melissa Diaz. This was the Melissa Diaz Report. I am leaving now. I hope you have a great Thanksgiving and a wonderful weekend. And I'll talk to you next week on Monday with some new hot fire spins for your earballs. Your eyeballs? For your ear holes. Yeah. Anyway, I gotta go drink some more coffee. Have a wonderful day. Goodbye.